before I could tell him I loved him.
Forget Daddy. You don't need him anymore. You've got me now.
And she pushed him away from her a little and kissed him on the mouth with far more passion than a sister should show for a brother. Daniel put his hands on her shoulders and pushed her gently but firmly away from him.
No. This isn't right, Steph.
We're wolves, Danny. We can do whatever we want. We decide what's right.
Not this. Wolves have never gone in for this sort of thing. Even we have to follow some rules, or there'd be no point to anything. Besides, if word got out, and you know it would eventually, we'd lose all respect among the clans. If we're too weak to control our own desires, then we're too weak to control our family. That's what they'd think, and they'd be right. I love you, Steph, and I'll always love you. As a sister. I'll stay with you for as long as you really need me. But then I'm gone. Don't try and stop me. I love you, but he's my father.
Let's go.
Stephanie didn't look at him.
We have to meet with Cardinal Cassa and half a man before the ceremony begins.
They all ended up in the main reception hall again. Some optimistic soul had put up colored trimmings and streamers, and servants in full formal dress were preparing a buffet of little snacks and munchy things. There were also wines and champagnes in great quantity, if not quality. Cardinal Cassar seemed to be drinking most of it. Word had quickly reached him of his troops' fate in the rebel tunnels, and though he was loudly declaring it a great success to all and sundry, it was clear he wasn't fooling anyone, not even himself. Daniel and Stephanie looked on impatiently as Cassar blustered on, angrily brandishing his glass as he shored up his arguments with details that had more and more of fantasy in them. Half a man's thoughts were hidden, as always, and the investigator at his side kept a diplomatic silence.
Slaughtered the rebels in the hundreds, maybe even thousands. Hard to tell without dragging the bodies to the surface. All right, we lost some good men, a lot of good men, but we're the ones that ended up with prisoners. Your people never managed that before. We got 327. I've decided to have them all executed at the end of the ceremony, make a nice finish to the show, and make it clear to everyone who's in charge here.
I've seen your prisoners. Mostly women and children and a few wounded men. That's going to make a great impression on the watching billions. Would you like us to supply you with some puppy dogs and cute little kittens to kill as well, to complete the picture? I mean children. What's the matter, Cassa? Couldn't your people find enough cripples and retards to make up the numbers?
Cassa glared at Stephanie.
A rebel is a rebel. The executions will be a sign of authority and strike a major blow to the rebels' morale.
Can't say I agree, said Daniel. I mean, killing women and children in cold blood? It's not done, you know.
We're not playing your decadent court rituals here, boy. This is church business. Don't try and interfere with the executions, or I'll have my troops run you off.
So much death excites you, doesn't it, Cassa? You enjoy the thought of such slaughter.
And you don't? I thought you wolves had more guts.
We're in the same room as you, aren't we?
Cassa started to reply to that, and then stopped as he caught the glint in Daniel's eye. He knew of Daniel's reputation as a duelist, and his men were a long way away. Half-Man and his investigator were supposedly on his side, but...
I've heard a few reports of my own about what happened down in the tunnels. According to my sources, the rebels drove you off with some new kind of Esper weapon.
Rumors. Exaggerations. You should know better than to listen to gossip. The rejects have no Espers, let alone Esper weapons.
But they do have Jack Random.
So they say. I'm looking forward to hanging him. I mean, he's hardly a real threat anymore. Just an old man, worn down by time and failure, desperately trying for one last success. The Empire kicked his ass on Cold Rock, and my people will kick it again here. No one can stand against the faithful, just as no one can stand against the Church.
And Cassar smiled, thinking of the explosives he'd had placed in the factory. Not enough to do any real damage, but more than enough to disrupt Stardrat production, make fools of the wolves, and lay the groundwork for a church takeover of Technos 3. and then no one would care about a few troops lost in an unlucky venture. Half a man stood silently a little to one side, following the conversation and what was said and what wasn't, but feeling no wish to join in. He made a stern, forbidding presence with Investigator Scholl at his side like a primed attack dog, and he knew it. People here had been getting too familiar just recently. They needed to be reminded where power really lay. And he felt a need to appear strong after his babbling to Scholl. He'd never spoken that much about his past damnation since his original debriefings, and he didn't know why he'd opened up so much to Scholl. Perhaps because the dreams had been so vivid just lately. Or just because Scholl's grandfather had been such a good friend. Half a man felt the need for a friend, now more than ever. He didn't need to worry that Scholl might talk. She was an investigator, and completely loyal to the man who trained and shaped her life. He had no doubt of that. Which was why he'd had her oversee the placing of Kasser's explosives in the factory. He could trust her to do a thorough job. Michael and Lily chose that moment to make their appearance, late as usual. They'd made some effort to dress up for the occasion, but not much. Their clothes were of the finest cut, but worn without the necessary elan to carry them off successfully. There were recent wine stains on Michael's cravat, and Lily's long silver wig was perhaps just a little off-center. They were giggling together as they burst in, but tried to stop when they picked up on the cold formality in the room. They beamed around them innocently and headed straight for the wine. Daniel glared after them.
What are you looking so damn pleased about? Any later and you'd have missed the meeting completely.
And wouldn't that have been a shame?
Lily didn't look around as she poured herself a very large drink.
Don't worry, darling. I'm sure nobody missed us. And we're in plenty of time for the ceremony. Which is all you really need me for, after all. Personally, I wouldn't miss the ceremony for anything. I love a good ceremony.
And she and Michael shared another smile, thinking of the Chojiro-supplied explosives they'd placed in the factory. This would be one ceremony no one would forget in a hurry.
We may have a problem with the ceremony. The presence here of Toby Schreck and his cameraman has proved something of an embarrassment. He was supposed to be here to provide useful propaganda, but apparently no one told him that. I'm sure I don't need to remind anyone here of the repercussions from his previous broadcasts. Unfortunately, he has viewers in very high places, including Lionstone herself. And as a result, he has gained exclusive rights to a live broadcast of the ceremony. I had hoped to arrange a little accident for him at the last moment, but now that he's the only commentator available, we can't do without him. The ceremony must be seen, and by as many people as possible.
Oh, it must. All kinds of people will be watching.
Don't worry, said half a man. I'll have the investigator stand right next to him. That should make him choose his words carefully. I take it the main aerial has been replaced?
Yes, some time ago. I do wish you'd read your memoranda occasionally, Daniel. The Cardinal was kind enough to supply us some of his technical people to help.
You bloody think so. After he blew the bloody thing up in the first place.
I have made my apologies. I have nothing further to say on the subject.
That makes a change.
Half a man fixed Daniel with his single, cold eye. When the door swung open, and Toby Schreck hurried in, as full of bounce as ever. Flynn glided in behind him, a new holocamera on his shoulder. Everyone else moved instinctively together, to present a unified front against a common enemy.
That's what I like to see. Good grouping. Relax, people. We won't start broadcasting till the ceremony itself, which I'm sure I don't need to remind you is going out live. So, Cardinal, watch your language. I hope you're all ready to begin, because everyone else is. All the factory staff and those church troops not currently lying flat on their backs and moaning quietly have been assembled outside and are standing in neat ranks, boiling in the summer heat and no doubt praying fervently for the start of the monsoon season. The Cardinal's prisoners have been lined up and securely chained in place. They were making rather a racket, but some kind soul has dosed them with industrial-strength tranquilizers, and now it's all they can do to stand up straight. The execution should make for a good show, Cardinal. The populace does so love its blood sports. Even if the prey this time are mostly women and children. What happened, Cardinal? Were all the rebel men off on a fishing trip, perhaps? One of these days, your tongue is going to get you into trouble you won't be able to talk your way out of. And I just pray I'm there so I can rip that wagging tongue right out of your head. Don't ever change, Cardinal. It's part of your charm.
Toby looked across at Stephanie.
May I suggest we get a move on? It's never wise to keep a mass audience waiting too long, especially if it happens to include the Empress Lionstone herself.
The ceremony, it had been decided at practically the last moment, would be held outside the factory, despite the weather, so that the impressive size of the factory complex could be seen and admired all the better by the viewing billions. One of the Star Drive assembly lines had been extended out the main doors, so that the very first completed mass-production Star Drive could come rolling out of the factory to be presented to the waiting crowds and the hollow audiences. The waiting crowds in this case being the increasingly rebellious factory staff and church troops, growing more and more ready by the minute to kill for a glass of cold water. Most of the faithful had been ferried down from the orbiting church ship in order to make up the numbers. They didn't look at all happy to be there. Deep-grained indignation seethed in the ranks, barely suppressed by the presence of the remaining Jesuit commandos. Star Drive production was months behind schedule already, and everyone knew it. The rejects had attacked so often that they'd actually managed to bring the whole process to a halt on more than one occasion. Though, of course, that had never been publicly admitted, even under the Campbells. The official line was teething troubles, to be expected with the development of any new technology. Only a few people knew that the new drive was derived from only partly understood alien technology that had a disturbing habit of killing the clones who worked on it, and those people kept their mouths shut, because most of them were dead, and the rest didn't want to be. Toby kept Flynn moving, covering the ceremony from as many angles as he could get away with, without making the watching audience dizzy. He was careful to give each of the main players equal coverage, to avoid later claims of bias, and made sure Flynn kept a very safe distance from Kasser at all times. Luckily, Flynn's union had been able to emergency express him a new camera in time for the ceremony. And if having a camera actually blasted off your shoulder by a disruptor didn't count as an emergency, Toby didn't know what did. Surprisingly, Flynn hadn't been that upset at the time.
"Hell," he had said. "I've covered Democracy Now! Protest marches. God, they're a vicious bunch. Nothing scares me after them."
Toby smiled and shrugged, then and now, and got on with his job. He couldn't help wondering how much Imperial News must have laid out in payoffs to ensure his exclusive coverage. It wasn't really a major news story, but there were enough names and personages present, combined with memories of the rebel attack during the last live broadcast, to ensure a major live audience, including the Empress. Which meant this broadcast could be a major feather in Imperial News's cap, if Toby didn't blow it. He was determined not to, at least partly because he had been told, quietly but very firmly, that if he did screw up, he shouldn't bother coming home again, except in separate pieces. So he worked his backside off, getting quick interviews where he could, combined with interesting shots of the crowds and the prisons and the factory complex, to liven up the long, pompous speeches from anyone who was anyone, or thought they should be. He was a little upset he hadn't managed to get an interview with the legendary half-a-man, but Investigator Scholl had taken pains to keep Toby and Flynn at a more than polite distance. Toby had tried mentioning the importance of a free press and the Empress's name, but Scholl gave him such a look that he decided to go somewhere else very quickly before she decided to grab Flynn's new camera and insert it into one of Toby's main body cavities. Lily and Michael smiled for the camera when it was pointed their way, but otherwise stayed quietly in the background. The temptation to keep checking their watches was almost overpowering, and they both tended to jump at sudden loud noises, but even their excited expectation couldn't keep them awake in the face of the speeches. Michael began dozing with his eyes open, an art he'd perfected while forced to listen to long, boring speeches at court, and was actually close to nodding off completely when Lily elbowed him suddenly in the ribs. His head jerked up, and he glared at her as he rubbed his side gingerly.
"Don't do that. It hurts."
"Be quiet, you big baby. Pay attention. See that flunky carrying a tray full of drinks?"
"Of course I can see him. I'm not blind."
"Then keep watching. One of those glasses, the one with the crimson streaks in the stem, is headed straight for dear Daniel. And there's enough poison in it to see off a regiment of nuns."
"Are you crazy?"
People turned to look at him, and he gave them a brief, meaningless smile before lowering his voice.
"Have you lost your mind, Lily? You get us both executed!"
"Relax, Michael. I know what I'm doing. Since the Chojiros said we couldn't actually blow up our respective spouses with their explosives, I've had to make other plans. The poison is completely undetectable unless you know exactly what you're looking for. And by the time they can ship the body back to a civilized pathology lab, all traces will have disappeared. The waiter's working under a post-hypnotic command. I told you my witchy gifts would come in handy. His mind will wipe itself clean of all memories of the incident once he's passed the white glass to Daniel.
Not quite. Michael fought hard against an urge to take her neck in both hands and squeeze till her eyes bulged.
They'll know it was us anyway, because we're the only ones with a motive. The first thing they'll do is have an Esper look inside our heads just in case.
Nonsense. Daniel's death will be blamed on the Webbles, just like everything else that happens here. And I will finally be free. If everything goes as planned, we can try the same trick on Stephanie later.
Lost for words, Michael could only stand and stare dumbly as the waiter carried his tray of drinks past the various personages, subtly turning his tray so that they took the glass nearest them and not the one with the poison in. Lily grinned broadly and squeezed Michael's arm with both hands. Which made it all the more heart-rending when half a man ignored the glass he was supposed to take and reached across the tray to take the glass with the crimson-streaked stem. Lily's eyes widened, and she clapped a hand over her mouth to muffle the squeals coming out. Michael thought he might faint. Killing Daniel Wolfe was one thing. Poisoning the extremely important and well-connected half a man was quite another. The Empress would move heaven and earth to find out who was responsible, starting with a complete Esper scan of everyone present on general principles. And, sorry, it was a mistake, wouldn't go down all that well as an explanation. But there was nothing they could do. They couldn't say anything without giving themselves away. So they just stood and watched helplessly as half a man raised the glass to his half a mouth and drank deeply.
How long till it works?
It's supposed to be instantaneous, especially considering how much I put in. I'm surprised the glass didn't melt.
Half a man emptied the glass and handed it back to the waiter.
Very nice. Do you have any more?
Lily shook her head dazedly as the waiter went on to deliver a harmless glass of wine to Daniel.
I don't believe it. Half a man doesn't drink. Everyone knows that.
Maybe he's never been this hot before. I bloody haven't.
Well, why isn't black smoke coming out of his ears? Ear.
Michael shrugged. It would appear poison is just another of the long list of things that can't kill half a man. Cover for me. I'm going to find something to hide behind and then vomit for a while. He stopped as Lily grabbed his arm again.
Now what's wrong?
I don't know. Something bad is coming. I can feel it.
Lily!
My witchy gifts are never wrong.
Of course something bad is coming. We planted explosives, remember? Now shut the hell up before you start drawing attention to us.
And let go of my arm. I'm losing the feeling in my fingers.
Lily scowled and turned her back on him. Michael sighed and was grateful for small mercies. The speeches droned on, lasting longer than expected, as speeches have a way of doing. Some of the prisoners and factory staff had passed out from the heat and were brought back to consciousness by varyingly brutal methods according to when the camera wasn't watching. Time was getting on. A lot of people had started looking at their watches. Toby looked at his and hoped the audience would stick with him, if only for the executions. He frowned despite himself. He wasn't sure how he felt about that. On the one hand, they were definitely rebels, criminals. But on the other, most of them were women and children. Toby Schreck had justified a lot of questionable things in his life. Working for Gregor Schreck did that to you. But murdering children in cold blood was just a step too far, even for him. He thought a lot about what he could do, and it seemed to him that he only had one chance. A last-minute, live, on-camera appeal for clemency for the children, direct to the Empress. The watching billions would eat it up, and Lionstone just might see the advantages of appearing warm and sentimental in public. Either way, it was the children's last hope. He couldn't save the men and women. The public had to have its blood. And so everyone checked their watches again and again, making frantic calculations in their heads as they waited for their planned surprises to pay off. They were all so preoccupied that no one noticed Investigator Scholl quietly disappearing from the scene on a mission of her own. Mother Superior Beatrice sat on a folding chair outside the hospital tent, savoring the fresh air and drinking wine straight from the bottle. Even the evening heat was refreshing after the claustrophobic charnel house stench inside the tent. There was more room to move inside, now that the worst off had died, but the tent was still crowded from wall to wall with human suffering. Beatrice sighed and took another long drink. She was saving more patients than she was losing, but only just. The door swung open behind her for a moment, letting out a brief rush of cheap disinfectant, barely covering the stench of blood and pus and gangrene that lay beneath it. She shuddered, her hand shaking for a long moment after the rest of her had stopped. She'd seen so much death and pain, and she was sick of it. Let someone else cope for a while. She knew eventually her strength would return, and then she'd get up and go back into hell again. But for the moment, it was just too much to ask. So she sat on her chair and drank her wine, and looked sardonically down at the great ceremony taking place outside the factory. She'd been invited, but she was damned if she'd give them the satisfaction of attending. That would have been too much like endorsing their stupid bloody war. Approaching footsteps jerked her out of her reverie, and she looked around to see Investigator Scholl trudging unhurriedly up the low rise toward her. Beatrice frowned. What the hell did Scholl want with her? Investigators tended not to acknowledge any wound that wasn't immediately life-threatening, and they weren't great ones for visiting the sick. She studied Scholl as she drew closer. Grim-looking woman, but then again, investigators weren't known for their sense of humor, either. Scholl finally came to a halt before Beatrice, not even breathing hard after the climb. Scholl nodded briefly. Beatrice nodded back, but didn't feel like getting up.
Nice evening for a stroll, investigator. What brings you my way? Ceremony get too boring?
Something like that.
Scholl glanced at the tent entrance.
Keeping busy?
Always. There might be lulls in the fighting out in the field, but here, the fight to save lives just goes on and on. Of course, you wouldn't know anything about saving lives, investigator. Not your line of territory.
No. It must be a hard job. Unpleasant at times. Having to make harsh decisions about who you can help and who you can't. Which ones you have to sacrifice so others can be saved. I can understand that. It's a lot like my job sometimes.
Beatrice frowned. It was almost as though the investigator was trying to explain something to her. She shrugged and offered the bottle to Scholl.
A quick drink, investigator? Good for the soul, so they say.
No thanks, Mother Superior. I don't drink while I'm working.
Beatrice made the connection, even as Scholl drew her sword, and she threw herself sideways off her chair. An investigator's only work was killing. The sword blade whistled through the air where she'd been a moment before, and Beatrice hit the ground rolling. She surged up onto her feet again and flailed out wildly with her bottle. The wine shot out of the narrow neck in a solid jet that hit the investigator right in her eyes, blinding her for a moment. Scholl lashed out with her sword anyway, but Beatrice had moved again. She brought the bottle down on Scholl's head as hard as she could. It didn't break, but the investigator slumped to one knee under the force of the blow, shaking her head. Beatrice hit her again, putting all her strength into it, and this time the bottle shattered on the investigator's skull. Scholl fell forward, and Beatrice turned and ran, still holding the jagged bottle in her hand. She ran, though she hadn't a clue where safety lay anymore. Scholl's orders had to have come from very high up to risk upsetting the Sisterhood, which meant she had no friends here on Technos 3. She'd offended practically everyone at one time or another. No, she still had one friend, with influence if not power, Toby Schreck. She sprinted down the hill toward the factory complex and the ceremony. If she could put out a plea for protection on live holo coverage, the wolves would have to protect her or face the entire Sisterhood's wrath. Beatrice ran on, pushing herself as hard as she could, the wine she'd already drunk swimming heavily in her head and stomach. And she tried not to hear the pursuing feet of the investigator, not all that far behind. Jack Random, Ruby Journey, and Alexander Storm moved silently through a newly cut tunnel, deep beneath the surface of Technos 3. Up above, on the jagged metal surface, the rejects had launched a surprise attack against those guards not attending the ceremony, to keep them occupied while random small parties slipped unnoticed past the factory's outer defenses. The tunnel ran deep, undercutting Wolf and Rebel trenches alike, to emerge beyond the innermost of the circles of hell, inside the factory's perimeter. The Wolf forces would detect the new tunnel soon enough once the attack was over, but by then, Random and his force would be inside the factory. The tunnel collapsed behind them. In theory...
I don't like this,
said Storm.
I really don't like this. The Wolf technicians must have spotted us by now. The guards could be down here any minute.
Not so long as the rejects are keeping them busy, said Random. And I do wish you'd stop complaining, Alex. You're starting to sound like my fourth wife. May she rest in peace.
She's dead?
No, just wishful thinking.
I warned you about her, too. You didn't listen to me then, either. This scheme is crazy, Jack. It can't work.
You say that about all my plans.
And I'm usually right.
Look, forget all the ifs and maybes. It's really very simple. The rejects keep the troops busy, and while everyone else is occupied with the ceremony and the force screen is down for the broadcast, we slip in and free the clone workers and get them out before anybody notices. What could go wrong?
I've made a list, but I don't suppose you want to see it.
Hold your noise, or I'll hold it for you. You're getting too loud, Storm. Someone might hear you.
Who? According to the master planner here, no one's around to hear us.
There's always the chance some guard hasn't read the script and is hanging about where he shouldn't be. Just because it's a really good plan doesn't mean there can't be complications. Did you really never like my plans, Alex?
No, I bloody didn't. They were always needlessly complex and extremely dangerous, especially for the poor sods who had to carry them out.
I never asked my men to do anything I wasn't willing to do myself, and you know it. Hell, I led those undercover teams as often as not. Anyway, if my plans were that bad, why did you keep volunteering to go along with me?
I was younger then, and you were my friend.
Random stopped and looked back. Ruby stopped too, and instinctively moved in close beside Random as he studied his old friend thoughtfully. Storm looked almost defiant, the dim lighting putting shadows in his face. Or perhaps they'd been there for some time. For a moment, Random thought he was looking at a completely different person, someone he really didn't know at all. And in a moment of insight, he wondered if that was how Storm saw him these days.
You were my friend? As in used to be, but not anymore?
Storm met his gaze squarely.
I don't know. I used to think I understood you, but you've changed, Jack. Look at you. You're younger, stronger, faster. It's not natural. I can't even follow the way you think anymore. What are you becoming, Jack?
Myself, as I used to be. I'm back in my prime again. A second chance to get things right this time.